Our next speaker is Mr. Mick Wallace.
Madness.
Madness. This is madness.
We cannot fix a problem caused by capitalism with more capitalism.
They hurt the people.
I ended up at the end of a gun
on three occasions.
I done well to survive anyway.
Madame Deli will speak.
A union which allows fiscal rules to be broken for arms expenditure,
but not for housing or to put roofs over the heads of people.
This is evidence of police violence. Whether you're an economic migrant or you're an asylum seeker, nobody deserves to be treated like this.
And even having the neck to suggest separating people from their mothers. How dare you?
They don't need us to kick them around the place.
You could say so what?
The police in riot gear with Trump. I am ashamed to call myself a European.
Recognition of Guaido.
Unelected gobshite.
Is an absolute embarrassment.
Now, you did use the word gobshite, and so I would reprimand you over that.
First, let me welcome back our listeners to I Foresee Trouble with Daly and Wallace. I have these massive headphones on, which I find very difficult to use sometimes. We are in Strasbourg for today's episode in the plenary session. Nice to be back. And we're going to do our episode today on the state of the union, the absolute state of it. We did one last year, if you want to hear how that went a year ago. But this one, we had today, we had Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the European Commission, speaking in the European Parliament in Strasbourg, addressing all the MEPs about the state of the union. Anyway, let's get cracking. Our episode is on the state of the union. So the two of you were in the chamber listening to what...
Sure, look, we're still traumatised after it. How many platitudes and nonsense and waffle can you get into an hour's speech? I mean, it's pretty much... as bad as last year in terms of all of that sort of, you know, Europe's strong soul. We do this together. We did it, you know. And the reality is just the complete opposite. Like, Europe is in tatters, really, in some ways, post-COVID. You know, they're gunning up now for another sort of an EU army. And she's just kind of going, we are great and everyone else is terrible. But I find it soul-destroying to sit and listen to it. Such... nonsense, to be honest.
What's your general impression, Mick?
I tell you what, I mean, not only did I listen to her for an hour, but then I listened to the main group speakers for the next hour after that. And I tell you what now, I found it fairly soul-destroying. Mm. And it would make you wonder about the place. And I know we said when we came over here that we came over to change the place, not to kiss its arse. And that if we couldn't change it, we'd burn it. But I tell you what, I think we may start buying matches, I think.
It was kind of delusional. I got the impression when it's delusional, like that they're in this bubble and they're kind of going, we are great. And they have all their little buzzwords, you know, next generation EU, the European Green Deal. And they're coming up with a new programme now. So next year is going to be the year of the youth. Mm. And I was thinking, God almighty, well, we've just been through the year of the rail and rail has been decimated in Ireland. So I hope the year of the youth now next year goes a bit better than that. But, you know, they have a programme and they call it ALMA. They love all these little words. So ALMA now is going to be the programme for the sort of disadvantaged youth of Europe who don't get a chance to go to college, and that they will be unleashed for work experience in different member states. And on the one hand, you could say, well, that is nice. I mean, the Erasmus experience that college students get to go and be educated in another member state is nice. The idea of our young people who don't get the ability to go to college are able to similarly cross borders and exchange experiences with their European peers. Well, that's a nice idea, but you can't help getting the feeling that it's just either a sop on the one hand, or else it's a sort of a way of getting a bit of another bit of cheap labour, or, you know, interns or trainees who probably get paid a pittance, like, you know.
Yeah. So that's it. Usually with this yearly high profile speech that comes, this is Ursula von der Leyen's second one, by the way. Before that, we had ones by Juncker, and you hear a list of new initiatives that are going to happen. It's kind of like priorities, what's going to be brought forward for the next year. So that was one of them that we didn't really know much about, and there's a lot of details still to be fleshed out on it, but it's one of the initiatives that will be coming forward. But we'll get into details about some of the other stuff. But Mick, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, well, I suppose the most heartbreaking element of it is the lack of honesty. The scarcity of truth in all the different issues you covered, and we can go through them gradually.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I find it too bad that we're absolutely brilliant about everything as the European Union, and all the bold people trying to undermine us at our borders. you know, I mean, it's just, it's children wouldn't fall for it.
Mm.
And it undermines politics. I mean, you know, I mean, I think when people kind of don't do what it says on the can in politics, I think they really, really let the thing down. And if people just say things that sound good and just paint everything as being rosy all the time and don't face up to realities, that's heart wrenching, you know. I mean, at home, probably. I mean, the thing that probably undermines any kind of credibility in politics, and God knows was probably scarce even when we went into the Dáil in 2011. I mean, the thing that undermined it most in our 8.5 years in the Dáil was Labour going in with the right wing Fine Gael and behaving the very same as them. That was a big blow for me. For a lot of the people that I knew, that was an awful blow to them because, you know, in fairness to Fine Gael, they did what they said on the can. They're a right wing neoliberal party that looks after the rich, but for Fine Gael, for Labour to go with him and do, and behave the same, was a big blow, I thought, to the credibility of politics. And I think what's going on in the European Union at the moment, and the European Union is facing an awful lot of problems, and for the likes of van der Leyen to get up today and to talk absolute sweet nonsense about the problems we're facing and pretending that all is grand, from COVID to Afghanistan, to the economies. Oh, God, help me. I mean, it was just hard to take.
Yeah, and that's exactly the tone she was trying to go for anyway with the first part of the State of the Union speech, which is on the vaccines. It was like the EU vaccine saviour and how great we did and look at how much we're doing for the rest of the world. Really kind of distorting figures, even not being very honest about what happened. Like she's talking about how half the vaccines were donated. Of course, they didn't go to the Global South countries as well. A lot of them went to Israel and other countries like this. Also about the vaccine rate is 70% of adults, which is great. She did go into that. But the rest of it is this kind of leadership and that we're winning on vaccines, which is the complete wrong tone. I don't know why she went in for that, but it was to say, look how great we are, a big pat on the back. And you know, and the thing is, she didn't say patents once, and we were talking about patents now in the past year.
And she kept getting pats on the back.
Yeah,
I lost count of the number of rounds of applause she got. And when she said, we exported 700 million vaccines, there was,
I 100 million even. Yeah. Was yeah.
They forgot to say that we have put up a barrier against the patent waiver, a barrier, and we're refusing to take it down. She forgot to say that only 3% of the people of Africa have got one dose. 3% have got one dose, and she's boasting about stripping it to the world. And now, and I mean, there's no instance they were talking about, oh, we need to all get a booster one now before we even bother getting the people in the Global South to have one.
Yeah.
Whereas, in fairness to the World Health Organization, they're standing up to it and saying, listen, this is madness.
So she did touch on this about the inequality from the vaccine rollout. But you'd swear like there was no role of the EU in creating that inequality with these patents, like you said. And the whole thing was just really self-congratulatory. Look how great we've done. We're winning on this race, you know. And it was actually just weird, I thought, you know. Mm. But so that was then, of course, linked then into the economic rebound, which is a big point to try and make about how great Europe's doing now and that we're already on our way to recovery much faster. And she kept comparing to the US and China even. She said, we expect 19 countries to be at pre-pandemic levels this year, with the rest following next year. Mm. And she said growth in the euro area outpaced both the US and China in the last quarter. So that was a big point she wanted to try and get across, and also to say this isn't like the last recession or anything. So, yeah.
And it bears no relationship with the reality that people are living in Ireland or other European countries either, where people are still struggling from the overhang of the crisis. We've still had only recently some workers in Ireland going back on full wages. We've a crisis in employment in loads of sectors where employers let people go and now they haven't got the people to take them back on as the economy turns around. And it's actually still an incredibly difficult economic situation for so many people, you know.
Hotels at home cannot take large bookings after the restrictions are lifted on the 22nd of October, because they said there's not a hope of us being able to get the staff to deal with large numbers. You cannot book for a large number, bar maybe give Catherine Zapone a ring, maybe she might have a nice one. There's, you know, and the queues in the airport, in Dublin Airport, in the last few weeks are directly linked to the fact that they laid off people, weren't prepared to keep them on, and now they can't get them. The last day I was coming through 2 weeks ago, there were 7 lines closed, right? And the queue went on and on forever. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I mean, it probably takes, if I think of 1, 2, 3, it takes 6 or 7 people, I'd say, to man a line, and 7 lines closed. So they're probably, just for that shift alone, down 50 people.
Yeah, and the key thing is that the jobs they're advertising now are far lesser quality than the ones before. So you take it, Dublin Airport is hiring, looking for people now, but the terms and conditions are far worse than anything that was in existence before. That's been replicated throughout the likes of Aer Lingus. Tesco's at the moment have a deal with their workers where they're basically part of the package in return for a bit of a pay increase, but it's to give up rights that were campaigned for over decades in terms of sick pay, pension schemes, all of these things, and all of the employers are looking for these as well. So what we have is a race to the bottom in terms of employment across Europe now, and some of it's been linked to the recovery money, is been linked to sort of in the semi-state sectors and so on to a worsening of conditions. So we have the yellow pack labour now all over the place, privatisation being facilitated all over the place. We see the consolidation of airlines now, where even of the low cost carriers, ones like EasyJet, who are a low cost carrier, but where they recognised unions, they were not, you know, totally bottom of the barrel. They are now being squeezed on both sides, and the possibility of them being taken over by Wizz Air, who are one of their sort of great claims to fame is that they're even more ruthless than Ryanair. And this is what we see across the different sectors, and this is the backdrop that Ursula von der Leyen tells us is a healthy Europe, a competitive Europe. It just means profits for the big employers, and
that's
not
probably,
good position
to be honest, that's
workers.
Probably why she focused so much on the growth issue, this kind of macro kind of scale of Europe, because it's easier to look at that rather than looking down at the details of things. And we didn't hear much about workers' rights at all, actually, and that's probably the big, like, the rollback and the Uberization as well, all this kind of stuff that's been happening over during the pandemic. She kind of papered over that and was kind of happy to talk about a general kind of rebound in growth. But anyway, so the other kind of stuff she was talking about. Do you want to come
just
in?
Just on the finance thing, yeah. I mean, when you talk about the, you know, percentage growth and that kind of thing, right, as we're pointing out, right, it doesn't necessarily reach an awful lot of people. But one thing that should be pointed out is that the 10 richest people in Europe, all billionaires, increased their wealth by 180 billion during COVID, since the start of COVID. So that's a huge chunk of the money she's talking about that looks so good today. Well, that ain't much good to most of the people in the world or in Europe.
Yeah, it's a shame we couldn't get the speaking time for the two of you in this debate, because I'm sure you had a load of things to say back. But but anyway, another thing she went on about for ages at the start was on the digital transition. Digital this and that, and she wants the EU to be, well, it's one of the priorities of the Commission now for a while, but this, the leader, the global leader in the digital transition, and a lot of it is about reducing dependency on Asia and creating a new initiative for the EU to develop its own production and supply of digital things, and like semiconductors and chips. She was on about this for a lot at the start.
Truth is, they've missed the boat on most of that anyway, though. You know what I mean? China and those are the world leaders on it, and they're really just playing catch-up. The space for them to carve out an innovative niche is not really there for them anymore.
But she was in denial about that. She was literally saying that they were ahead of China and the US. I mean, she was making it up.
I know. Kind of, and it's interesting, we're talking about Galileo and that, and their kind of, their big thing is, you know, they think they're moving into space now to take over space, because they've kind of lost the battle on Earth.
Yeah.
But I mean,
it's,
I think they're right. I mean,
so.
You're right, Mick, like, going on about truth. Like, I mean, I think they're like disconnected and from reality. I think she's insane, actually.
Did you hear her latest big development on protecting the freedom of the press?
Yeah.
Well, I roared What about Julian Assange, right? I mean, they haven't one word to say about the fact that Julian Assange is under lock and key for 10 years and his latest court case is coming up in 5 weeks. Yeah. He's literally in prison for telling the truth and she has nothing to say about it.
She's going about freedom of the press in Russia, but they don't say anything about Bulgaria.
What was she saying actually on this? It was towards the end of her speech. She said something about protect journalists and protecting press freedoms and protecting this, and that's what she wanted to stand for values.
And
to protect our democracy. She was linking to democratic protections, but
she was linking it to protecting our borders.
Yeah. Our values get a little. Our values. Those pretending are. And they're great, going to support.
At one stage, she said, "Our great European values. Yeah. They're not European values anymore. They're great European values."
I mean, it's just.
We saw enough great European values being pushed into Afghanistan as well, so she talked a little bit about Afghanistan.
She went on for ages about it. She didn't tell anyone the truth about it.
She said we're going to increase humanitarian aid to Afghanistan by 100 million. She didn't really talk about how it's going to be delivered or anything. And then we heard lots of kind of sad tones about the situation there.
I mean, it's the total hypocrisy of what they say and what they do. I mean, they talk about supporting people and we stand by and we support the people of Afghanistan. Everybody goes, yay! And then it's kind of, well, as long as they stay where they are or they just go to Iran or Pakistan and then we'll throw a big potload of money at Iran and Pakistan to keep them there and then we'll allow out some people who worked with us, inverted commas, like we'll take them and we'll bring them in. And that is not even in compliance with international law. I mean, they've been talking now for over a month about resettlement schemes. We've seen no numbers, no commitments of the amount of people they're going to resettle. And by concentrating on resettling, which is kind of like taking people out, recognising they're being exiled and kind of giving them a pass into Europe, it doesn't say anything about the other asylum seekers and refugees who we have a legal responsibility to take. And if you like, by concentrating on resettlement, we're almost ignoring them. And most of the people coming out will be coming through illegal routes. And under international law, we've an obligation to deal with them. But instead of that, they're putting up the barriers as of usual. And the monies, that some of the monies that they've been given is actually for border security. It's not to facilitate the processing of asylum applications or anything. It's basically to keep them out and keep the money in third countries, which is just a joke.
And but even the talk about giving the money to third countries, countries that border Afghanistan, people mightn't realise it. But there was a UN guy in at the CEDAW committee last week, and he told us that there's 3.5 million Afghans refugees in Iran. And he says that they have been very well cared for. They've been incorporated into society. They have access to health. He says they're going through school. He says Iran has been amazing with them. Talk about helping Iran. We have sanctions against Iran. The US obviously has much worse sanctions than Europe has. But their sanctions against Iran were crippling them. And they're minding 3.5 million Afghanistan refugees for years. Since the Taliban took over the place, there's 5,000 refugees a day crossing the border from Afghanistan into Iran illegally, right? That Iran will have to try and deal with. And is Europe going to give money to Iran to help deal with them? I believe it when I see it.
Yeah,
well, they're saying that, but isn't it gas? Like they go on, Iran are completely opposed to our values. Iran are one of the baddies, like in this scenario. But then we have Iran welcoming all these people, and within the boundaries of Europe, Lithuania, Latvia and Poland recently, in response to a couple of thousand refugees coming in across the border from Belarus. Did they process the couple of thousand? Did they what? They changed their laws. They fast-tracked legislation to basically keep out refugees in violation of international law. Poland doubled its National Guard on the border and started building a wall so that nobody can get asylum. And then we hear them talking about European values, and this is what European countries do, unchallenged by the European Commission. And then we have other countries which welcome refugees and so on, and they're the baddies. I mean, it's reality being stood on its head in this place morning, noon and night.
And she was trying to be very strong on this Belarus issue in particular, trying to respond to that. But she was saying it's a hybrid something. What's a hybrid? What's she call it? I can't remember. Fuck. Anyway,
I missed that.
Anyway, it was funny that she was talking about welcoming refugees, then on about politicising Belarus.
Yeah, she was accusing Belarus of weaponising refugees by allowing them to cross the border. But I mean, listen, these are refugees that the majority who have been created by war and imperialism of one form or another, whether it's financial imperialism or military imperialism. And we actually are responsible for an awful lot of these refugees. There's 85 million people displaced forcibly in the world today. And an awful lot of that has been caused by US-NATO wars in the whole West Asian region. Mm. I mean, it's just... And she went on. I mean, a lot today about protecting our borders as well. And if you remember, after the Taliban took over. And listen, and there is an awful lot of people in Afghanistan that for their safety need to get out of the place. And we should facilitate it because we created the mess that they're in. But the first council meeting after the Taliban taking Kabul, what the strongest note coming out of it was that we must strengthen our borders.
Absolutely.
We must prevent a flood of refugees getting in to Europe. These are refugees because we made refugees of them.
Hmm. And she made that clear today in the speech that it's not that the arms are wide open here in Europe. There are some nice words on accepting those who deserve the asylum, this kind of thing she was talking about. But she was talking about public opinion being against also just having an open doors policy. So it's kind of weird this approach she was taking.
What that actually reflects is the immense divisions inside the European Union. I mean, the reality is that statement that Mick talked about, which was appalling from the interior ministers in response to such a crisis in Afghanistan, and basically it was shutting the door with a little bit of a, you know, sort of soft music, but that was the only statement that they could get all the members to sign up to. And then we had the irony in the debate on Russia of them saying that Russia is dividing us. Russia is undermining our value and attacking us. But sure, it's not Russia that's dividing the European Union. The European Union is already divided of itself because of its own neoliberal policies and because of the lies and that trying to bandy together a bunch of bandits, really, like, you know. There is no such thing as European values or our values. It's utter nonsense.
I mean, when she started then, when she moved on to actually talk about what happened in Afghanistan, it was no surprise that she was taking no responsibility. And the EU and NATO, full of European member states, have been there for 20 years. And the level of poverty in Afghanistan is double what it was in 2001. And they were talking about, oh, we have to be careful now that there isn't a flood of drugs coming into Europe. The opium production in 2001 was 185 tonnes. It was 9,000 tonnes in 2017. And they said they were there fighting the drug trade. They said they were there to fight terrorism. But they were dropping bombs. They were killing civilians, women and children. They were making terrorists. And they said they were trying to stop migration. They were actually making migrants by destroying the country. They destroyed the place. Mm. And they increased dramatically the number of migrants looking to get to Europe. The hypocrisy of it all is just mind-blowing. And she went on. She went on to talk about us needing to strengthen our own military capacity.
Let's get to that, because she talks at length about defence. I think it was probably the key part of her whole speech, actually.
Scary.
Most amount of detail, most amount of time. I think we should actually have a listen to her to hear what she actually says.
We have a long history in building and protecting peace. The good news is that over the past years, we have started to develop kind of a European defence ecosystem. But what we need now is the European Defence Union.
Yeah, well, I mean, wake up, Irish government, or rather wake up, Irish people, because the Irish government is party to this as well. And we are on our way, as we have said, towards a defence union and ultimately towards a EU army. I mean, the amount of times now this has entered the conversation since Afghanistan, that the wrong lessons has been drawn by so many people who believe that the lesson of Afghanistan is, and the disaster is, that we in Europe didn't have an army to defend our interests. And we've seen, and we've made the point before, that there's been so many other piecemeal projects, from PESCO to the Strategic Compass, through the integration of sort of a civilian response with the military capabilities as well, that this is entering the sphere of information technology. All of this is being driven by the military-industrial complex, and that's linked to securitization of our border. This is phenomenal, and the speed at which this integration is going,
well, the conclusion,
is incredible.
Let's just jump into the conclusion. It was one of the first things Borrell said after Afghanistan, that we need, it's time to start thinking about a European army and start thinking about how we do things like this without the US.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I challenged Borrell on it last night when I had speaking time on Afghanistan. And I said, and you think the lesson to be learned from this is that we need more European military strength? My God, will they ever learn? I mean, it's 2001, 20 years ago, since the EU and NATO unleashed a war in Afghanistan, and it has led to the death of close to 250,000 people, mostly civilians, and it has displaced 2.6 million minimum. And the only lesson they're learning from it is that we need more military. What chance of us stopping Shannon being used as a US military base to destroy these communities if the Irish government takes the same line as Van der Leyen?
No, I mean, this is an orchestrated narrative now, right? Yeah. Now, this is absolutely deliberate, and they have their PR people in the arms industry, who are one of the biggest lobbyists here, have now decided to seize on this idea that the lesson of Afghanistan is that we need an army. And we're going to hear that more and more. Now, already that's been built on top of a structure that saw the defence being part of an EU budget for the first time in its history. We now saw her talking about other measures that you had noted her saying, Mick, to facilitate the arms industry even more.
She's actually talking about reducing VAT for member states wanting to buy new military hardware. Reducing VAT for military hardware. Yeah. I mean, could you imagine reducing VAT for the ordinary people of Europe? Mm. But do you know what I found one of the most scary things she said for me? Now, listen, years ago, there was a notion that according to international law and the UN Charter, you didn't go fighting unless you were attacked. You didn't go fighting unless you had to defend your own country. You didn't actually just go and invade somebody else, right? But this idea of, the Americans invented this idea of the preemptive strike, or get them before they get us. She said today, and it made the hair stand on my head, a crisis abroad has to be dealt with or it will come here. Mm. Now, that's the same philosophy as the preemptive strike. Mm. Oh, yeah, we must fight more wars like Afghanistan. Mm. We must, because if we don't, war will come here. Now, how in God's name were the people of Afghanistan going to bring a war to Europe? I mean, it wasn't going to happen, right? And another part of that needs to be pointed out. Talking about learning lessons from Afghanistan, I pointed out yesterday that what's happening in the Sahel today is an absolute repetition of Afghanistan. It's almost identical, right? There's phantom soldiers getting phantom training, puppet governments that don't have the support of the people, and you see the enrichment of corrupt elites and the arms industry. And last year, I pointed out that the EU-trained forces in the Sahel kill more civilians than terrorists. They kill more civilians than terrorists. These are EU soldiers down there. There's French soldiers down there. You have some UN people down there. Mm. And there's over 20,000 troops down there from Europe. It is absolutely crazy. Mm. They shouldn't be near the place. There's over 70% poverty. And all to protect French stealing uranium and other minerals for bargain basement prices. Mm. It's colonialism. It hasn't gone away. And they're trying to excuse it. We're fighting terrorism. Fighting terrorism. They're making terrorists. Hmm.
And then on the other side of it, there's their Russia strategy, which is the arms industry benefiting as well, because with EU-Russia relations, worst ever. And the EU's response in the debate that we had was we need to strengthen our links with NATO. We need to develop our own defence capabilities against Russia to deter Russia. They even had in it that they wanted to prevent Russia from dealing bilaterally with EU member states, that Russia wouldn't be allowed to have a relationship with any EU member state, that their relationship had to come through Brussels. Now, did you ever?
That was, they said the only capital or something for dealings with Russia is Brussels.
And all the arms and all the weaponry around that.
Can we have a listen to your speech, Claire, in response to this crazy report that was just voted today?
We surround Russia with NATO bases and we call them the aggressor. We support opposition groups and we accuse them of foreign interference. The European project is not being undermined and divided by Russia, but by the rank hypocrisy that is characterised in this report. And the only beneficiaries of this nonsense is the arms industry made fat on the profits of its hysteria.
But anyway, the conclusion from all of this, like that they're trying to draw and really push, is this EU army thing. And I know the Irish media at home thinks that this is some sort of fabricated threat in the left and that it's an electoral issue. But seriously, like we had von der Leyen today saying that she and President Macron now will convene a European Defence Summit in the first half of next year during the French presidency on this issue. It's going to be a major priority for the next council presidency. And like, watch this space now, because this has been one of the biggest pushes now, what's happened now in Afghanistan, to accelerate this. We heard so many MEPs today get up and speak in favour of further militarisation of people in the State of the Union debate, when you can talk about anything that's happening and criticise or make points or say we should do this, and people standing up saying we need an EU. So
the people at home in Ireland should realise that the European Union functions on money from member states. Money from member states is money from citizens from each of those countries. So Irish taxpayers' money is going to the EU, and billions were spent in Afghanistan. And you know what? It had been better if they'd thrown it into the Liffey, because at least someone would have been retrieved. Those billions went into training soldiers in Afghanistan that didn't exist, just as has happened in the Sahel today. There was billions spent on building infrastructure that never existed. It went into the pockets of elites in Afghanistan. And one of the dark horses in the room today, during her whole speech, she hardly said a word about the Afghan government after the president they backed for the years, Ghani, who disappeared with got on a flight before the Taliban arrived in Kabul with $169 million of suitcases. And he actually left one suitcase behind him in the airport with $2 million in it.
Yeah.
Right? He was bringing $171 million with him. He left one behind him. Whose money is this?
Yeah.
This is European taxpayers' money.
Yeah.
And there's not a word about it.
Yeah.
And there's no acknowledgement of the fact that the Afghan government was a sham. It was a puppet EU-US government, and it was a complete fake, and they weren't doing a fraction of what they're supposed to be doing. There was some small improvements made in Kabul, the city, the capital city, and bugger all outside of it.
And I think it's ironic, because we'll hear them now giving out about the Russian elections. They'll be giving out about the Venezuelan elections again later on in the year, where there's regional and local elections with 36,000 candidates standing in the elections. They won't be legitimate elections. Yet the Afghan government was elected on a voting turnout of about 2 million out of a population of 35 million. The results came out 6 months afterwards. They haggled over loads of them. The boys were deemed to be kind of split in the end, divided between them. And that was a legitimate government. Like,
and don't forget that 300,000 votes disappeared.
Yeah.
Of the few,
I think it was maybe 4 million.
Anyway, I think the thing on Afghanistan in her speech today was particularly this not taking any responsibility for it, talking about it with a broken heart, and just really just making this wild conclusion that we need to then ramp up defence. That was all that she went with on Afghanistan. And other things she touched on, let's just go through them quick, on cybersecurity. Another big priority she wants to make up. A lot of this stuff is about EU autonomy and getting back our autonomy. And and our strategic autonomy and all this. But yeah, there's a new initiative going to come on that. Claire, you mentioned this thing about the youth at the ALMA, this new programme that we're going to see about young Europeans doing short work experiences abroad. There's another Global Gateway initiative, which is about infrastructure investment abroad, which is literally and very vocally about countering China's aggressive infrastructure building around the world. That's not something that I'm concluding. It's what she's actually saying, that we shouldn't be connecting a Chinese port to a Chinese this. So we're talking about taking back our own autonomy, but at the same time trying to thwart Chinese infrastructure investment in other places. So that one's a bit of a head scratcher, I think. Do you want to comment on that?
No, yeah. Well, I was just going to add on another issue that she touched on was global trade. And I mean, she said global trade is good, but it cannot be done at the expense of people. And she got a great round of applause again. Right? It cannot be done at the expense of people. It is invariably at the expense of people.
Well, the reason she said that, and it's an interesting one, she didn't mention the Uyghurs in her report, in her speech, but it was her way of saying that we're going to take action against China, and it was about forced labour in production chains and banning market products from getting on the market. But as we discussed before, there's very subjective analysis of what that can mean. So I think that was what she was basically saying there. And there was a big round of applause, of course.
Oh, yeah. No, she got a round of applause at bottom, yeah. Right, because she brought, I swear she did. I remember, right? And I mean, the idea, there's European companies working in the global south, paying people peanuts. Where, I mean, people don't forget that 4.6 billion people in the world live on less than $5 a day. And most of the business, the majority of the business in the global south is controlled by business interests from the developed world, which is North America and Europe. And if you start thinking that we're not seeing products on our shelves in Europe that engage slave labour and child labour, well... But wake up.
That's the thing. Like, of course, everyone's in favour of not having that stuff on your market. But that would mean basically everything from what's made from Nike, everything, all these, as Luke Ming said as well about the Qatar tickets for the next World Cup shouldn't be sold then as well. Yeah. Because there's no way they can be put on the market then in that case. So just watch, because it's going to be used very selectively. And we know the real intention behind it. And on rule of law stuff, Claire, is there anything to note?
Well, if she did say anything, I was closing my ears, because she hasn't got a leg to stand on after the two rule of law reports that her commission put out that failed to deal with the flagrant breaches that happen outside of Hungary and Poland and are actually rampant in the likes of France and Spain and Bulgaria and all of these other countries. You know, it's absolutely disgraceful how selective they are in talking about independence of the judiciary in some places, but not in others. And then they're lecturing the rest of the world.
I mean, I think people should understand that we really want Europe to work in a fair manner. And you keep kind of thinking that the penny will drop and they'll start telling the truth and that they'll do things different. Well, today wasn't that day. And it was really, it was depressing.
Mm.
And you see, the disconnect is, I mean, it's funny, like it was discussed at the Foreign Interference Committee there a while ago, like that there are people here who still believe that Brexit was caused by Russia, that Russian interference gave rise to Brexit, even though that's been thoroughly investigated by the House of Commons, independent committees and so on. And there's no evidence of any Russian interference in the Brexit. It is no Russians or Chinese people undermining the European project. It's the neoliberal ideology at the heart of it, and this rank hypocrisy of talking one thing and doing the others, that's making the project unravel. And that's really sad, because like she talked about the conference of the future of Europe, and that should be a conference for young people. Young people should engage. No young people across Europe are going to engage in it. The only ones who are the ones who are already in the bubble, who see a career for themselves in here. The vast majority of European youth and people are outside of that. They're just trying to get by. And unfortunately, the European project is leaving them behind. So it's really regrettable, because actually an integrated Europe where we can share and learn so much from each other would be so good. But they're doing everything to make sure that that's not going to happen, actually.
Yeah, that's it. So that was the State of the Union for this week and this year, actually. Sorry. So next,
the State of the Union, the state of her.
I mean, she is desperate. Like, she's an absolute. Oh. She's an absolute. Oh God, she's torture to listen to. You know, it's really, it's a kind of Mills and Boone sort of, you know, B movie script. You know, delivered badly. Like, you know, a pantomime performer in Ireland now would do better than that. Anyway. Yeah. Enough said.
That's it for today's episode. We'll be back next week, and we'll see how those Russian elections go. And there's German elections coming up as well.
I have a few bob on a fella now. I won't tell you who it is.
So that's it. Have a nice week and ciao for now.
Bye bye.
Auf Wiedersehen.